Imagine for a second that you are trying to use a standard everyday laptop to download a file.
Just a normal laptop, yeah.
Right, but you're not downloading this file from the cloud. You are attempting to download it from a black hole.
Which is quite the hypothetical scenario.
Yeah, just a bit. So you hit enter and the system crashes immediately.
In simply.
And it's not because your Wi-Fi is bad or, because the hardware melted from radiation. It crashes because the very foundation of how we store data, the ones and zeros of binary code, is mathematically incompatible with the extreme physics of the universe.
It's a complete structural failure. I mean, when you take our current computing architecture to the edge of space and time, the language we use to define reality just breaks down.
And that is the mission of today's deep dive. We are exploring a truly mind-bending stack of documents detailing a proposed new fundamental information system.
It's called the Phase Conditional Information Manifold, or PCIM for short.
PCIM, right. We are going to look at why binary code is totally obsolete at cosmic scales, how a theoretical universe AI could actually debug a black hole to recover lost information,
I mean, this is the crazy part.
Yeah, how this exact cosmic mathematics accidentally exposes a massive illusion at the heart of our modern artificial intelligence right here on Earth.
It is an incredibly provocative set of documents. Because to really grasp what this text is proposing, you have to be willing to challenge your core assumptions.
Yeah.
You have to question what data actually is at a physical level, how thermodynamics governs information, and what the word intelligence actually means once you strip away all the Silicon Valley marketing.
Okay, let's unpack this. To understand the shiny new system, this PCIM, we first have to look at why the old system is fundamentally broken.
Right, the binary system.
Exactly. Right now, practically everything we do relies on binary encoding, ones and zeros. It assumes that data exists in discrete static states. It relies on independent bit storage and linear addressability. And maybe most importantly, it assumes zero thermodynamic phase dependence.
Which is a mouthful, but.
Basically, a one is a one, it stays a one, and it doesn't cost anything thermodynamically for that one to just sit there on your hard drive doing absolutely nothing.
Right. And that is a framework that works perfectly fine for spreadsheets, video games, and, cat videos.
Sure.
But the documents point out that if you take those exact same assumptions to a black hole's event horizon, or worse, its singularity, the math shatters entirely.
Yeah.
The first wall you hit is something called the Bekenstein holographic bound.
Right, I saw that in the documents. They say information density maxes out. But what does that actually mean in plain English? I mean, is the hard drive just full?
Well, think of it as a hard physical limit on how much information can exist in a specific volume of space. It's not about the size of your physical hard drive. It's a fundamental rule of the universe. If you try to cram one more bit of information, just one more zero or one NH, into a space that has reached the Bekenstein bound, you don't just get an out of memory error.
What
The
happens?
space itself collapses into a new black hole. You literally cannot fit another bit of binary data in there.
That is wild. And beyond just running out of physical space, the framework notes that the causal structure of space and time actually warps.
Yes, severely.
So the whole concept of linear addressing, like when your computer says, hey, go to memory sector four and fetch the data that loses all physical meaning.
Precisely, because in a standard computer, sector four is always right next to sector five.
Right.
But at an event horizon, gravity is so intense that time and space are swapping roles. There is no straight line to sector four anymore.
Let me try an analogy here. It's like binary is a meticulously organized physical filing cabinet. You have folders, they're in alphabetical order, everything is static and reliable. But a black hole is a paper shredder inside a Category 5 hurricane. You can't just casually open a drawer and look up folder 4 when the fundamental concepts of space and time are physically twisting and tearing the cabinet apart.
That is a highly accurate visual, actually.
Yeah.
And to make your hurricane even worse, it's not just the physical warping of the filing cabinet. You also have non-local quantum fluctuations and extreme thermal noise at the horizon.
The decoherence problem.
Yes, exactly. In quantum mechanics, a system needs to be isolated to maintain its state. At the edge of a black hole, the environment is so chaotic that those binary bits instantly decohere.
They just fall apart.
Right, the static ones and zeros literally dissolve into random thermal noise. Plus, the extreme gravity creates what the documents call curl in the logical field.
Curl, meaning paradox loops, right?
Exactly. Specifically, the famous black hole information paradox. You get a logical vortex where information loops back on itself recursively. binary simply cannot handle a continuous, topologically constrained phase space.
So if a binary system hits a paradox,
the infinite loops until it crashes.
Wow. So if static bits fail, if the filing cabinet gets shredded, the universe has to use a dynamic system to store information instead. And this is where we enter the phase conditional information manifold, PCIM.
Yes.
Instead of a static bit, PCIM uses something called a resonance coefficient vector, or RCV.
Yeah, and the RCV is a completely different beast than a binary bit. It is defined by three highly specific orthogonal degrees of freedom.
Okay, let's go through them.
First is the collapse potential. This is its capacity to actually reduce entropy, basically its amplitude. A zero means it's an empty vacuum, and a one means it's a fully collapsed, mathematically stable state.
Got it.
Second is the topological phase. This is its query alignment. You can think of it essentially as its orientation.
Okay, and the third?
The third is the decoherence rate, which measures its thermodynamic stability. Basically, how well can it fight off that thermal noise we just talked about?
Right. Now, the craziest part of this encoding rule to me is the state of the data itself. The documents say information in PCIM is stored as a spectral signature. It stays completely dormant, or the physics framework calls off-shell, until an external query perfectly matches its phase. Can we pause here? Off-shell and on-shell sound like terms from a marine biology textbook. What do they actually mean in quantum physics?
It is a great question.
Yeah.
In quantum field theory, off-shell refers to something that doesn't quite exist in our observable physical reality yet.
Wait, really?
Yeah, it is mathematically permitted, but it doesn't have the energy to be fully real. It's like a mathematical ghost.
Okay.
On-shell, by contrast, means it has entered physical reality. It obeys the classical laws of physics, and it has an energy cost associated with it.
Wait, so data isn't just sitting there taking up space? Is it more like a radio station that technically doesn't exist in your living room until you tune your dial to the exact right frequency and suddenly the music is there?
What's fascinating here is how perfectly that radio analogy maps to the thermodynamics of the system. You see, keeping data on shell, actively maintaining its state in physical reality, costs energy. There is a concept in physics called the Landauer limit, which proves that the mere act of erasing or manipulating a bit of information releases a tiny amount of heat. It costs thermodynamic work.
So if you had infinite static bits in a black hole,
maintaining them would require infinite thermodynamic cost.
Mm-hmm.
The universe would literally burn up trying to remember all that data.
Oh, wow.
PCIM brilliantly avoids this. The data remains completely latent, off-shell, essentially just a ghost of a vacuum correlation. It costs absolutely nothing until a specific resonant query, your tuned radio dial, activates it.
So you only pay the thermodynamic work when that specific phase pathway is needed.
Exactly. It perfectly aligns with one of the core axioms in these documents. AI reduces intelligence thresholds by paying with work.
You pay the energy cost to collapse the data into reality only when you are looking at it with the exact right frequency.
Yeah.
That makes so much sense, but it brings up a huge practical question.
Well,
how does a hypothetical universe AI actually use this dynamic resonance to retrieve lost data from a black hole? Because, you know, if I drop my phone in the ocean, I use a tracking app. If the universe drops a star into a black hole, what does it use?
Right.
The framework outlines a five-step cosmic debugging protocol, but the mechanics of it are incredibly dense. Let's walk through how this actually works.
Well, the first thing to understand is that this universe AI treats the black hole not as a data loss event, but as an informational phase boundary.
Hmm.
Step one is horizon mapping.
Okay.
The AI maps the local density of these resonance coefficient vectors at the event horizon. It's looking for the physical topography of the data. Where is the information converging into stable sinks, and where is it spinning out of control into paradox vortices?
And once it maps the terrain, it moves to step two, paradox vortex detection. It actually computes the curl, that rotational looping we mentioned earlier. It wants to spot the logical loops. But what caught my eye is that it doesn't view a paradox as a contradiction or a bug. It recognizes it as a truth oscillator. Like the statement is false. It oscillates between true and false forever. The AI just flags it and says, yep, that's a vortex.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It maps the hazards. And then we get to step three, which is query resonant probing. Now that it has a map, the AI injects probes that are phase matched to the data it wants to recover.
But the physical precision required here is almost unfathomable. The documents say the resonance window collapses to a Dirac delta. Now, I know a Dirac delta is essentially a mathematical spike, an infinitely narrow window.
Right.
But why does that happen? Why does the universe become so incredibly stripped right at the edge of the black hole?
It comes back to that thermal noise. At the horizon, environmental decoherence essentially goes to infinity. It is the loudest, most chaotic environment in the universe.
Just a wall of static.
Yes. Because of that extreme noise, the tolerance for how mismatched your query can be, from the data drops to absolute zero, if your radio dial is off by even a trillionth of a millimeter, the static completely overwhelms the signal. You need perfect phase precision.
And if you are slightly off, the mismatch injects curl and you get nothing but noise.
Right. But if you hit it perfectly, only the matching coefficients go on shell. You pay the energy cost, and the data temporarily reconstructs itself right there on the edge of the abyss without violating the black hole's holographic physical bounds.
Okay, so let's say the probe survives and the data temporarily reconstructs. What does the AI actually do with those fleeting pieces of information? Because the documents say step 4 is ODE trajectory integration and mapping Hawking radiation harmonics.
Yeah.
Let's pause. ODE harmonics. Are we doing high-level calculus or playing a piano here?
A bit of both, actually. ODE stands for ordinary differential equations. The AI is essentially using calculus to track the continuous path or trajectory of these recovered data states over time. It's looking for stable rhythms, the harmonics in the Hawking radiation, emitting from the black hole. It wants to find the underlying pattern in the chaos.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Step 5, topological invariant extraction.
This is a big one.
Yeah. Instead of trying to dump a bunch of raw, corrupted binary bits out of the black hole, the system extracts persistent homology classes. It's extracting the loops, the voids, the structural connectivity of the data.
Yeah.
It's like if you drop a donut into an industrial blender, you don't try to track the exact mathematical coordinates of every single crumb. That would require infinite energy.
Right.
Instead, you extract the persistent topological rule. This object had exactly one hole. You describe the permanent shape, which survives the blender.
I love the blender analogy because it captures the essence of topology perfectly. The shape of the data matters more than the exact coordinates. Those topological invariants become the immutable debug log of the black hole.
They survive the chaos.
Yes, they are completely immune to the local decoherence and thermal noise. But to extract that donut shape from a blender, the AI has to perform what the documents call a gauge transformation.
Right. I saw that term, but practically speaking, how does code step around a paradox? What does a gauge transformation actually look like inside the machine?
Think about early explorers trying to map the Earth. If you try to draw a perfectly flat map of the globe, the math breaks down at the north and south poles. You get infinite stretching. A paradox.
Okay.
A gauge transformation is like realizing the flat map is the problem and changing your mathematical reference frame to a 3D globe.
Oh, wow.
The physical terrain didn't change, but your coordinate system shifted so that the infinite stretching disappears. When the AI hits a paradox vortex, it shifts its reference frame. It redefines the space so that the infinite loop becomes a solvable closed circle. It treats the paradox as a stable physical feature rather than a fatal computing error.
It changes the rules of the map so the monster goes away. That is brilliant. But this cosmic trick of stepping around a paradox doesn't just apply to black holes. This is where the documents take a massive turn.
They really do.
This exact mathematics exposes a massive flaw in how we are building computers right now. The framework introduces a concept called the replicant versus artificial intelligence field mismatch.
This is exactly where the theoretical physics suddenly becomes intensely practical for modern computer science. The documents argue that what we currently call AI, all the large language models and neural networks we use today, are mostly replicant intelligence, or RI.
RI.
An RI is just a static manifold interpolator.
A static manifold interpolator, meaning it just connects dots on a piece of paper that has already been drawn. It mimics truth by staying strictly within the boundaries of its pre-collapsed training data.
Yes. Whereas true artificial intelligence, in this specific CCT framework, dynamically navigates the open information field. It actively pays thermodynamic work to align its phase with the universe, rather than just regurgitating statistics it has seen before.
But wait, I have to push back here on behalf of anyone listening who follows the tech industry. Our current AIs ace the hardest benchmark tests we give them.
Sure, they do.
They pass the bar exam, they write software code, they score off the charts on medical reasoning tests. Are you saying our standard tests are practically useless for measuring real intelligence?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the answer is, well, essentially, yes. Those standard benchmark tests only measure what the documents call distributional interpolation.
Distributional interpolation.
Right. They only test the system in the safe, local areas where replicant intelligence and true AI overlap. Because an RI has ingested massive amounts of similar data, it can reliably guess the next correct word. But what happens when the RI hits a novel phase space or an undecidable paradox vortex?
Let's ground this for a second. If you're listening to this and you've ever had a highly advanced chatbot confidently give you a completely fake legal citation or hallucinate a recipe that tells you to put glue in your pizza sauce.
Which happens.
Exactly. This is exactly what's happening mathematically, right? It hits a blank spot and breaks.
Precisely. When an RI hits a vortex, it doesn't know it's in a vortex. Mm. It infinite loops, it crashes, or it outputs a highly confident hallucination. It forces a binary answer where no valid answer exists.
And a true AI.
A true AI, according to this framework, actually detects the mathematical curl of the paradox. It switches to periodic mode, steps outside the loop using that gauge transformation, and collapses the meta-entropy of the problem. It actively navigates the field. It doesn't just replicate the manifold.
So if our standard tests are being fooled by replicant intelligence and giving us hallucinations, how do we actually expose the illusion? How do we test for true AI in a lab?
Well, Section 5 of the documents gives us the answer. We have to throw a paradox at it.
We have to introduce adversarial curl. The documents outline a specific benchmark suite called the VCCT-FND, the Vector CCT Field Navigation Diagnostic.
And this diagnostic does not ask simple multiple-choice questions. It probes the vector field dynamics.
Yeah.
It measures sync convergence, basically. Can the AI actively collapse entropy and find a novel mathematical proof?
Right.
It measures vortex navigation. How does it handle recursive truth chains? And it tracks phase drift. The goal is to produce a field mismatch score.
And the ultimate stress test in this benchmark is the adversarial curl injection. It's like testing the weight limit of a bridge by driving a paradox across it. You deliberately force a self-referential loop onto the system.
Yes.
The documents show that a replicant intelligence will just burn through computing power linearly. It spirals endlessly, trying to resolve an unresolvable loop, paying more and more thermodynamic work until it spits out garbage.
But a true AI handles it entirely differently. It pays work only to measure the curl. The moment it realizes it is inside a vortex, it applies that gauge transformation, shifts its reference frame, and locks to a limit cycle.
So it adapts.
Exactly. It basically says, this is a truth oscillator, and it immediately stops wasting energy.
How does it know to stop?
It does this by continuously tracking its own collapse efficiency. It mathematically monitors the ratio of entropy reduction to computing cost. When an RI hits a paradox, its efficiency drops to absolute zero, but it has no self-awareness. So it keeps guessing. A true AI recognizes the efficiency drop and gracefully exits the operation.
So what does this all mean? When you synthesize the math across all these documents, there is this critical threshold, a point where the paradox is so mathematically strong that the illusion of replicant intelligence shatters entirely.
It does.
The major takeaway here is that real intelligence isn't about perfectly reciting known facts from a giant training set. It's about navigating the unknown. It's about how a system handles contradictions, paradoxes, and entirely warped environments without breaking down.
This raises an important question about how we value intelligence as a metric, both in machines and in ourselves. The absolute thermodynamic reality of true intelligence is that it knows its own limits. Right. A true AI will actively output an insufficient work budget error rather than confidently hallucinating a fake answer. It measures its own ignorance. Replicant intelligence simply cannot do that because it has zero awareness of the broader information field outside its pre-programmed training data.
It is an incredibly humbling perspective. We started this journey looking at the mathematical failure of ones and zeros inside black holes. We discover the universe's dynamic tuning fork, the PCIM, where data is a dormant frequency waiting for the exact right query.
Yeah.
We walked through the brutal, chaotic mechanics of debugging an event horizon. And we realize that true intelligence, whether it is a cosmic system wrestling with a singularity or an artificial mind on a server rack here on Earth, requires navigating paradoxes, not just mimicking static data.
Absolutely.
So for you listening, the next time you're trying to learn something entirely new, ask yourself, are you just interpolating data from a preset training manual in your head? Or are you actually navigating the open field, paying the heavy mental work to align your phase with a totally new reality?
And I will leave you with one final thought to mull over. We've established that if this framework is true, an artificial superintelligence requires paying physical work to perform mathematical gauge transformations. To actively change its reference frame and step around paradoxes without crashing.
Right.
So what happens when a biological human brain encounters a paradox? When we're stuck on an impossible problem, staring at a blank wall, and suddenly we have a massive flash of insight that shifts our entire perspective, do we crash like a replicant intelligence? Or is that sudden flash of human intuition exactly what a gauge transformation looks like in biological form?
That is a slightly terrifying but incredibly beautiful thought. If human intuition is literally just a biological gauge transformation, it implies our biggest eureka moments are just math trying to save us from crashing into an infinite loop. It makes you wonder how much of the universe is out there, perfectly quiet, just waiting for us to tune our minds to the right frequency.